Welcome in, everyone, to Flyover Footy. My name is Matt Baker, here as always with my friend in soccer, Santiago Beltran, here for another Flyover Fallout. Tonight, we look at the 2-2 draw to Austin FC that St. Louis City had in their first away match of the 2024 MLS season. Santi, how you doing before we get into all of this?
Doing great, Matt. It was one of those games that we suffer until the end, but at the end, Celio was able to score and a point that it's good, but always leaves you thinking like the team could have gotten 3 points, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah, to frame our conversation here, I had a late night post on X, and this came after a really late watch because thanks to daylight savings time, we're all dealing with a little sleep deprivation as we get through this 2-2 draw. But I framed this as, is this draw a good point because we came from behind, or is it a frustrating point because we were the overall better team? And I think there's a measure of truth to both of those. So we'll start where we usually do with the starting 11. And for the first time in the 2024 season and the third time overall in the history of St. Louis City, we ran back the same exact starting 11 that we did last week. Roman Berkey was in net. Anthony Markanic, Joachim Nilsson, Tim Parker, and Thomas Totlin made up the back line. Chris Durkin and Edu Leuven were in the midfield. Celio Pompeu, AZ Jackson, Indiana Vasilev, and Sam Adeniran were our attackers. Same starting 11, and thanks to Abby Stylenow on Twitter, who made the comment about the third time ever that City had this entirely unchanged lineup. I find that fascinating, that it's something that we really never did last year, either by ability, necessity, or just choice. And in the third game this season, we're already able to do that. Santi, what'd you make of this starting 11?
Well, it was great to see the same as starting 11. I really like what the team did last game, and we were talking about it during our podcast on Thursday, and we thought that it was going to be the same lineup. The only question mark, and it was more on my side because I didn't want to make it boring and have the same lineup. I had a thought that maybe Klaus will start, but yeah, the team didn't do that a lot last year, and seeing it on the third game, It was great. It was a promising lineup, and it was a game that was there to be won based on what Austin had done on the first two games. So it was an exciting lineup, and I'm glad there weren't any changes to start with.
Austin FC, on the other hand, they had a few changes from what we had seen in the first couple of games. They still struggle to find their identity without Sebastian Driussi. And this continued that as Driussi was named to the bench, but did not appear. And for anybody watching the broadcast, you were well aware of what Sebastian Driussi was up to because it seemed like they had a dedicated camera for him on the bench and they just did not want to stop talking about him. But he made no difference in this game. In fact, Austin FC for the first time started Diego Rubio and Jossie Zardes, their two strikers at the same time, in more of a 4-2-3-1 where Rubio seemed to play underneath Zardes. And the way they employed this was fascinating. They were more than content with having City possess the ball, play on the ball, and they seemed to like to drop back into their low block and have more of a counterattack and send the ball along. Brad Stuver had so many long throws in this game, and they put St. Louis on the defense in that way. The average positioning of our players, Santi, was pretty clustered. If you look at the starting lineup and how they played into the first 60 minutes or so, you have a cluster of our attackers moved into a little past the midfield area as their average positioning. So this shows the more possession-based, more on-the-ball play that St. Louis was forced to do as they were working the ball upfield together. You did have Thomas Totlin and Anthony Markanic wide near the midfield area, but all of Celio Pompeu, AZ Jackson, Sam Adeniran, Edu Leuven, Indiana Vasilev, they were all kind of clustered together in their average positioning. So they were all making kind of simultaneous runs. How do you feel that this starting 11 handled what Austin was throwing at them? And do you agree that it was more St. Louis was being forced to, or preferred at least here, to play on the ball? And what do you think of Austin's choice to do that?
Yeah, that's what I was expecting from Austin, that they were going to sit back a little bit and make City create plays. But I like what City did. like trying to progress the ball. I like what I have seen so far when teams sit back, and it's something that has improved this year compared to last year. I was telling somebody last night that last year this game would have been different, and City would have trouble solving for a team sitting back. But no, overall, I like what I saw, and the guys like moving around midfield to try to progress the ball, sell you a little bit more higher than everybody else. But overall, I like what the team did.
Yeah, I as well made a note on after watching the game that this probably would have resulted far differently last year for St. Louis City. I think one of my takeaways from how they handled the way Austin was choosing to drop back into a low block reminded me of that first time we played Minnesota last year.
Yeah.
Where we couldn't do anything offensively. And then if you look holistically at this game, far different. And we're going to get into some of those stats that tell that story. So possession-wise, like I said, Austin was more than happy to let St. Louis take it. And we had some different possession numbers. So if you look at MLSsoccer.com, if you look at FotMob, you look at FBref, they all had different stats as far as our possession. Some even had different shots, different XG models were used for each of these sites. So if our numbers are different from what you're looking at slightly, that's why. Possession, St. Louis had about 57% possession, showing that a majority of the match they were possessing the ball, and it was slightly more in the second half, no matter which site you looked at. XG-wise, St. Louis was sitting at about a 2.2 with Austin just under 1, and about half of Austin's XG came from that second Julio Cascante goal. So you could see for the most part, St. Louis was still being clinically effective in preventing Austin from getting some of those good opportunity shots on target. And then St. Louis, for the first time in recent memory, and to the chagrin, I'm sure, of Matt Doyle, underperformed their XG.
Yeah, breaking news. St. Louis underperforming the XG. And this time it was Austin overperforming.
Exactly. And that's a point of discussion on the fan base too, is that the XG gods were not shining in St. Louis City's favor. One of the comments I had on the Flyover account last night from Eric Pfeiffer said, feels like we were on the wrong side of the XG gods tonight. We look like a better team for the vast majority, but to walk away with a point seems like a reasonable outcome. And I would agree with that, because you look at what Austin did offensively and they only had 2 shots on goal. This is actually a good trend. Santi, one of the things you can take away from the beginning of the season in the first 3 games, as you start to see trends develop, is St. Louis's ability to prevent opposing offenses from getting shots on target. New York City FC had 1 shot on target last week. We held Real Salt Lake the first week of MLS action to just 3 shots on target. 1, 3, and 2. Those are good numbers by any measure that you look at, despite the fact that they're 2 shots on goal actually fell in. And the way that that happened, we'll get to it. But I think that speaks to some effectiveness of St. Louis, but also the fact that they had a lot to work on.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that they only had 2 shots on goal keeps showing the great work the defense is doing. Obviously, when we get into the goals, there are some things to improve. But the fact that Roman Berkey hasn't had to work so much as he did last year. And even if you look at Austin on the other end, Brad Stuber had to make a few saves to keep Austin in the game.
Yeah. Moving the ball up, there was some fascinating stats behind how St. Louis was able to progress the ball effectively. They had higher pass completion once again. The last week, they did a good job against New York City FC in this regard to a more possession-based team than New York was. Around 75% to 64% in the pass completion that St. Louis won. St. Louis had more accurate passes, 302 to just 173 from Austin. Some of these pass stats in volumes are just wildly antithetical to what St. Louis typically does. And they were effective in making these passes. They weren't trying to spray the ball in between at tight defenses. They were making some good decisions. They won every duel category, including winning aerial duels 21 to 11. You made note before we started here that they didn't win a couple key aerial duels that they needed to prevent and possibly take home 3 points. But overall, when you're looking at how St. Louis was progressing it, the narrative is a continuation in a lot of regards from New York City, where when we did put the ball in the air, whether it's long, medium, or short, we were tending to win those battles. Austin was forced to clear the ball an awful lot. They more than doubled the number of clearances to St. Louis, 46 to 21, showing just how much they were dropping back and just how much they were just not willing to take the ball on, but also not wanting St. Louis to have any kind of an opportunity in their defensive third. That stat really stands out to me, Santi, in the clearances, because coming into this match, we expected Austin to be playing the ball out of the back, which they typically do. Their media, their fans will tell you that's exactly how they like to play. But how many times after a good Brad Stuver stop did he just send the ball? And how many times did their defense just get the ball out, whether it's just sending it long, sending it out, showing that they just had no desire to take the ball? They had no desire to take St. Louis on in their defensive third. What did you make of that?
Yeah, they knew that St. Louis is good at the press, and by playing those long balls, they wanted to skip the lines, and that's one of the ways teams have tried to play St. Louis when St. Louis comes aggressive with that pressing style. And yeah, Stuver, like with those long throws and not playing too much out of the back, Austin had a good strategy for this game, and it almost worked at the end.
But Austin also came out pretty well. And I don't think they surprised St. Louis when they came out. I think St. Louis, they seemed sluggish to start, but that's the feeling out process that happens at the beginning of every game. I get the sense that this St. Louis City team, in addition to showing some better tactics and better on the ball play, they're still that same St. Louis team that wants to try and punch you in the face to start the match. And if they can't do that, then they're willing to kind of go toe-to-toe and spar for a little bit just to see how the game's going to feel out. So that's why we saw maybe some I wouldn't say maybe sloppier play, but a little more in the trenches might be a better way to put it. And you had things like Chris Durkin being what Carnell calls the Joker, moving up at times out of his position and being that extra attacker in the final third. They did allude to that finally on the broadcast last night, calling Bradley Carnell's Joker out, which is fun to see. AZ Jackson had some moments, but Austin overall had a lot of just close tackles early. And before St. Louis had anything going, the wind was kind of taken out of their sails with that 14-minute first goal of the game coming from Matt Hedges. And one other thing that I'd like to frame with their goals to start is the fact that this now is the third straight game that Austin FC has played where an attacker has not scored a goal. Their defenders have scored all four of their goals so far in MLS play. And that's wild to me because it continues to show that they don't have a functioning offense without Sebastian Driussi. But this highlights one of those things that St. Louis just made a tactical error, and nobody's going to be happy with this particular goal, with either goal really, on the St. Louis side. Matt Hedges, first corner kick of the night. He went up in front of Chris Durkin, Sam Adeniran at the near post, perfectly placing it between Roman Berkey and Edu Leuven, who was managing the far post. I don't know that there wasn't a great angle to really tell, but it didn't really seem like anything Leuven could have done because he was over at that far post doing what probably would have served us well for the second goal. But nobody really had that in between that could cover the gap between Berkey and Leuven.
Yeah, you keep thinking about that. Oh, why didn't he try to go at the ball? But yeah, it's just a fraction of a second. And I think even if he had tried to do something, he will have ended up putting it into the net. We will never know. We didn't have a better angle. But just thinking about that goal, Matt, thinking about the play that led into it, obviously, it was a corner kick, but before that, what ended up in that play was a play where Leuven got dispossessed by Rubio, and there were a couple of chances to clear that ball and to get it back, but in the end, resulted on that corner, which was a very good executed set piece by Austin, and I'm sure Carnell and his staff are going to be looking at that to correct for future games, because Matt Hedges had a good run from the middle to that first post and ended up getting in position to head that ball.
That was the thing, is that it was just a well-executed set piece by Matt Hedges, and his movement off the ball to put himself in position to get in front of Durkin. That it was a good run. It was almost Tim Parker-esque in his movements. So, I mean, credit to him. You know, you had got to tip your cap in that kind of scenario. And that further enabled Austin to keep dropping low and not have to, it gave them more a breathing room in what they were doing and more comfortability in dropping low. But it also was kind of a wake up call for St. Louis, because I think it was, and I looked at some of the comments, it seemed pretty universally thought that after 15 or so minutes, St. Louis kind of woke up, and you had some big moments that bridged the gap between that 14 minute moment and halftime, really, where I saw things like the 23rd minute, you had a big moment between Edu Luvin leading Indiana Vasilev high down our left side as he crossed over, and then Stuver came up big right in Indy's face. So he made himself big, came off his line and stopped an Indy opportunity. You had 24 minutes, Indy's corner hit the ref, and you could tell. Yeah. And I want to actually pause on this one real quick. What was your opinion on what happened or should have happened? Because I admittedly haven't looked up the rules on what happens when the ref is impacting the ball during play, if it makes a difference between a set piece or open play. But everybody seemed a little, this seemed like an odd moment in the broadcast, because we know MLS has told their broadcasters not to focus on the replacement referee scenario. They specifically told their announcers, don't belabor the point and to address it pregame, if anything, but people don't want to hear about that. Was this a case of some questioning of what happened? Because Indy was allowed to retake that corner after his pass hit the ref.
I had never seen that on a set piece. I have seen it on open play, that if it hits the ref and mm-hmm. it bounces, if the bounce, it changes the course of where the ball is going. Yeah, they will stop play. But on a set piece, and the ball made it to the player that was supposed to receive it. So yeah, that was odd. That was odd, but still, we will have to look at the rule to see if he was right or not. But yeah, obviously the fact that a replacement referees can lead to some of these questionable plays.
In the end, it didn't really result in anything. So, you know, harm, no foul. And that was 24 minutes, 26 minutes. You had things like Thomas Totlin and the way he was recovering a ball long from Anthony Markkanic. It was kind of a switch where Markkanic was near the box on the left wing, and he tried to switch it in, but it just passed over everybody. And the way I call this out, because 26 minutes, the way Thomas Totlin was able to recover this and position his body just seems so fluid and so high level that I was just impressed by the way he was able to do that, even though nothing came from it. And then in 29 minutes, Roman Berkey trying to spark something with a save and immediate long kick out. He was trying to get something back in their traditional St. Louis fast break transition. Nothing came of it because Brad Stuver, again, came off his line. And he seemed more than willing as this game progressed to come off his line. Stuver had a lot of good saves, a lot of good decision-making in this one that really furthered Austin's desire to have St. Louis be on the ball and to prevent some of these transitions from happening. But then Santi, 36 minutes. 36 minutes was possibly our, I might even say, best chance of the night overall, outside of the PK, where Edu Luvin had a huge miss that he even addressed post-game, kind of overhit it. This play happened where Indiana Vasilev carried it past midfield on the right. He fed Celio Pompeu with a great through ball to the box. This was a fantastic pass, and I think this was indicative of a lot of well-timed passes on runs that St. Louis had. But Stuver, again, came off his line. Celio recovered it enough to get past defenders and Stuver to where mm-hmm. he had an entire open box there between Celio and the goal. He found Luvin at the top of the box where Stuver was still out of position, and Luvin sailed it high. It was a one-timer shot, and Luvin didn't settle it, and he sailed it high.
Yeah, it was that was an unfortunate play. Luvin, we were talking about on the broadcast, to me, Luvin, doesn't look 100% yet. He missed a little bit of the preseason, and, I know he has gotten to the point where he can play 90 minutes, but, I think he's still missing, some of that ball touch, and, you can see it in some of the set pieces, some of the corner kicks, we saw it on that shot that ended up sailing high. I think last year he would have made that one, but he will slowly get to that level that we were used to last year.
That's a good point that it might, I was thinking nerves in the moment just because, and he said post game. So for the first one, I just saw like three guys on the line, two or three guys on the line. So I was in a rush because I think I had somebody on my back. So I needed to shoot it first touch, but then I was leaning a little bit backwards. So that's why the ball went high. Looking at it afterwards, I could have taken the right short corner, like a low pass into it. So he's doing what we talked about last week, where he's looking at the tape already post game, and you can tell it was with him, because if he's making that comment post game, you know that he immediately went back and tried to figure out what he could have done differently. And that's the Leuven perfectionist that we have. And it might come, like you're saying, with more time in the season to just get a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, and obviously you can look at it 100 times after the fact. But yeah, there was a defender, I think it was Valencia. He was covering the goal line. So yeah, he was trying to go for the high shot. It just went too high. But yeah, he'll get there.
All right, Santi, we're having some rapid fire moments here in the first half, and I'm trying to give timestamps because it's indicative of what I think started to be, after that first goal, a really nice run by St. Louis. Leuven had that moment that we just talked about at the 36th minute, but then at 39, here's the controversy. Leuven free kick that was a goal, but wasn't a goal. Straight through, it hit the far post. It bounced behind Brad Stuver, who tipped it. The ball fell maybe past the goal line, and then Stuver swatted it out. I watched the replay a few times after seeing this initially, and I couldn't help but notice Tim Parker. Tim Parker, if you look, he was making the run. He ends up by the near post as the ball's bouncing around. And you could see Tim Parker, the moment the ball was tipped by Stuver and before he swatted it out, Tim Parker started celebrating. I didn't think it was any coincidence that he had that vantage point. He saw it go behind the line and he started celebrating when he did. It wasn't called. There was no goal line technology. And Leuven said himself after the game, yeah, the free kick, I don't know. For me, it seemed at least very, very close. The ball might have been in. I don't know. I honestly was waiting for the referee. I was thinking he can check it on his watch with the line if it was in or not. But yeah, in the end of the day, he said they checked it. They said it wasn't even. We still don't know. We're still arguing about it, if it was in or not. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. To our fan base, Santi, this one matters a lot. What did you think when you were seeing that live?
Yeah, I just think that when they reviewed it, they didn't have a good angle. They didn't have that Tim Parker angle to look at it. But I think that's just a call, at least in my opinion, for the league to implement that goal line technology. Because if you're not going to have enough camera angles to review the play, that could result in some of these situations. But I just think that when they looked at it, they didn't have enough evidence, a good angle to see that the goal crossed 100%.
So then the conversation this morning and post game becomes, why doesn't MLS have goal line technology implemented? And doing some quick reviewing of that at 2:30 a.m. that I did after my rewatch, you find that some of the leagues that people are comparing it to have a common theme to them. We're talking about the Premier League having implemented the goal line technology in the 13-14 season. You talk about Ligue 1, the Bundesliga, La Liga, and Serie A implementing it sometime after 2015-2016. The Championship in Serie B implementing it around 17-18. Eredivisie in the Netherlands implementing it after that. And then you see a bit of a drop-off. You have it implemented in some cup competitions. You have it implemented at UEFA. You have it implemented in stadiums where their clubs have implemented it that I just mentioned. But what's the common theme between all of those clubs? Well, it's money. Major League Soccer, along with some most clubs in South America or Africa, do not have goal line technology. And keep me honest on the South America one, Santi, but the numbers that I came across are that MLS Commissioner Don Garber, and this is as of September 2023, said he ruled out goal line technology because of its cost. Installation of the technology would have cost $260,000 per stadium, and then it costs $3,900 to run it each game. That lack of technology potentially directly impacted and potentially cost 2 points to St. Louis, but St. Louis isn't the first team to be impacted by this. As a matter of fact, the lack of technology back in 2023 directly impacted Austin in a game against Seattle. So you could see it both ways. It's not like it's unduly impacting one team. It impacts a lot of teams over the course of a season. But it seems right now that this one moment, along with the moments that have happened before, have not been the kind of tipping point for MLS to say, okay, now it's worth it. Now we're starting to see too many of these calls go unnoticed. And this article came out after the Apple TV deal. So you wonder, potentially, with the cost, is this something that Apple might see as, we have to implement this to improve our product, so we need Major League Soccer to invest in this, or something gets worked out that way?
Yeah, from the standpoint of improving the product with Apple coming on board, I think it will definitely make sense. But if Apple wants the league to burden that cost, it's just too much for the league. But hopefully down the road, between Apple and the league, they can work something out, because it definitely makes for a better product. It avoids a lot of these discussions and people thinking the team couldn't get 3 points or an important result because goal light technology wasn't there. But hopefully down the road, between the league and Apple, they work it out. Because, yeah, if you want to keep growing as a league at all levels, this is something that needs to be implemented at some point.
St. Louis, thankfully, didn't stop there. They continued their assault on target on Brad Stuver. And at the 44th minute, just before halftime, we had another, possibly one of our better chances by someone not named Edu Leuven, where the ball didn't go in. This was Indiana Vasilev. It was a Sam Adeniran shot that was deflected, falling back to Leuven on the right. Leuven played it over to Totland, back to Leuven, and then inside to Indy. There was a lot of ball movement on the right side of the field after that Sam shot. But Indy couldn't quite curl it enough as he moved from the right channel to the mid with his left foot, and he missed wide left. I really liked how this play developed, because it was off of a broken play, and it had some really good ball movement between Leuven and Totland. And then Indy, who just had so many opportunities that really couldn't find target, this was his best one so far.
Yeah, it was a great shot by Indy. And I like, and I mentioned it last time, City taking chances from long range, especially when there is nothing else available or nobody else available to continue progressing on the play. It was a really nice shot from Indy. Too bad it wasn't a couple of inches to the left that he could have a chance to score. But yeah, good play.
Bradley Carnell seemed to allude to that flurry of attack in the last 10 minutes or so with his post-game comment saying, quote, "I thought we got ourselves back into the game the last 10 minutes of that half," talking about the first half. He said, "I think that looked exactly like the game we planned for and how we wanted to get in through the lines, between the lines, and finish up with final plays. I thought that over the course of the game that we bring on the service, we get that energy, we get that penalty straight after the half, then we start taking a stranglehold of the game, and I think the players were positive at halftime." And this is important to note, because with no halftime subs, this is, again, the same group that's had that flurry, that picks up the pace of play, that seems to understand what they need to do to get a goal because they're having so many good opportunities. And it doesn't take long after half. In fact, it was the player who we haven't really mentioned yet, but he was beat up on the field, I would say. Felt like he was fouled for, like I put in our notes, the 456th time at the 48th minute mark. He was knocked around in that first half. Couldn't draw a card, but he was drawing fouls all over the play. AZL Jackson. And he finally draws a foul after moving the ball up in the 48th minute, passing to Chris Durkin high. Durkin was dispossessed a little bit by Alexander Ring. And then the ball fell to AZ right behind him, where AZ steps up. Ring continues his attack, and then tries to tackle AZ, misses the ball, gets AZ, takes him down, and a PK was awarded. What do you think of that for AZ and just his ability to draw the fouls that he did last night, as well as put himself in position to make this meaningful for St. Louis?
Yeah, no, he did a good job throwing fouls. Something I saw on social media, people didn't like the fact that he was falling so much. I guess in some of those plays, people thought he was trying to look for the fall, but in the end resulted on that play for the PK. But Austin must have identified something on AC that he is basically one of those players that can progress with the ball and start plays, and they were they were making these fouls, tactical fouls, to stop play. And this one, it was just in the box, and Alexander Ring couldn't control what he was doing. And AC also did a good job putting the ball in a place where Alexander Ring couldn't get it, and resulted in the foul.
AZ was far from our top performer in number of carries, total distance with the ball carried, but he did lead the team in fouls drawn. And that what you just mentioned actually reminds me a lot of what we heard from Nico Gioacchini last year, where he would put himself in position to draw those fouls, and fans had a tendency to think he was not drawing too many fouls, but getting himself taken down easily. And so that's an interesting... I fully disagree with that, but I can understand where it comes from in the sense that you're going down a lot. And I think it was just AZ's style of play that was doing that. But it led to a really good moment at the 49th minute where Eddie Leuven was able to even the score with a PK, very straightforward PK that Leuven buried in the lower left corner past Brad Stuver. And Austin FC, to their credit, was pretty quick to come back on this one. The 51st minute, Julio Cascante took the lead again, and St. Louis went down for the second time on another, it wasn't a set piece, but it was another stoppage in play. It was a throw in by John Gallagher from Austin's right, threw the ball long into the box where you could tell this was a design play. Every single one of their receivers dropped back into the box. The ball was headed out back to the left that drew St. Louis's defense to the ball over on our left side. Everybody collapsed a little bit like they usually do when the ball's on one side of the field. Then it was quickly crossed in by Alex Ring to Julio Cascante, where you could see that Anthony Markanic had tucked himself a little bit too central, right in the middle of net. Nobody was covering that back post. And how many times have we said, whether it's on a set piece, on a free kick, on a throw in, that back post, the far post, tends to be the weakness where St. Louis's fullback is tucking in just a little too tight.
Yeah, another dead ball situation. And when I was looking at the replay earlier this morning, so you mentioned that it was headed towards the far post, and it was Julio Cascante. So Julio Cascante headed back to start the play, and then he finished it. So that's something I'm sure the team is going to be looking at. Bradley Carnell on the press conference mentioned that there were two critical moments that they were going to need to go back and look. And yeah, like when the two center backs from the other team score on you, that's something that you need to go back and look at and see what happened. But another good execution by Austin. And I was thinking during the game, I was like, wow, last year City was so good on set pieces, scoring on set pieces. And it looks like today is Austin the one doing that number. And yeah, they had a good plan for those dead ball situations, set pieces. And it's something that City will need to go back and look at improving.
Thankfully, though, that was the last one of these dead ball set piece situations that really burned City. And it was probably the last real opportunity that Austin had. I mentioned earlier, they only had two shots on goal. And in looking at this period of time between the 51st minute and the 93rd, when Salio scored, there were a ton of great sequences by City. We could look at, and I've got lots of notes, and we're not going to go into every single one of them, but you're talking about great on the ball play, moving it very intentionally and methodically into some good areas, utilizing a lot of different pass types, crosses, through balls. I liked how City was playing it back once before moving it a little bit higher. It wasn't quite tiki-taka type, but it was at the same time shorter passes that they were using to spread out and move around Austin's defense to let them create more space to move higher up on the field. It was impressive to see that on the ball ability from a team that, like we said earlier, probably wouldn't have been able to do this a year ago, and definitely couldn't do it against Minnesota United in their first loss in 2023, where they tried to play and set up a similar style defense. This shows marked growth from St. Louis. And just looking at a few of those, I think you have a lot of guys involved in this. And so it's not just any one player. You have Celio Pompeu, who was consistently involved, getting some good shots off in 58th minute. You had Klaus come in when he came in finally for Sam Adeniran at the 59th minute. He was all over the place. I really liked what I saw from Klaus, his off-the-ball movement, his ability to take the ball at times, recover it, and create chances after being fed and holding the line. I thought what Klaus offered to me was very much different than Sam. And I couldn't quite pinpoint it. And I'm curious what you think about this one, Santi, because as the second half progressed and Sam had subbed off, the commentators noted that Sam was almost a victim of the chance creation by St. Louis in that they weren't creating for him. And I get that because the chances created for St. Louis were through the guys we mentioned earlier. It was through Salio. Indy had a lot of good chances. Edu Leuven had some shots, but nothing really materialized for Sam. And it seemed like Austin in their low block took Sam entirely out of the game. And so it took a while into the second half for St. Louis to start to be able to spread the field a little bit more, which we did see after the subs, for that number nine position to actually be materialized in this game. Do you think Sam was more a victim of Austin and their defensive structure, and then Klaus came in at the right opportunity for the game to be spread out? Or was it any specific difference between those two players?
Yeah, so Sam wasn't getting enough balls where he's usually very effective, which he wasn't getting the ball enough on the sides where he's really effective usually. But then Klaus comes in and he was more like on the center, and he protects the ball really well. And I think that was the difference, that when City create, while Sam was on the field, City wasn't doing enough on the wings where Sam is mm-hmm. really effective. And then you have Klaus, who plays a different style, and he's so good when he gets the ball. He draws defenders and he protects the ball, creates a space for his teammates. So just two different styles between Klaus and Sam.
That's fair. Thomas Ostrak was another game changer, I think, in the second half, where he took what Indiana Vasilev had been doing, not just on the right side, but also centrally, and he kind of furthered that. Thomas Ostrak seemed to play a little bit more of a central role as he came into the game, and I liked what he was doing from his progressive carries, because he had a lot of good opportunities where he was just carrying the ball very, very well. There were moments in, especially the 77th minute, where Ostrak carried it up to midfield, and he found Klaus, but they couldn't quite connect after Klaus had gotten the ball, and Austin shut that down. But it was a really nice opportunity that Ostrak was spreading the field on. You had the 82nd minute, a great ball that was sent by Salio to Klaus. Klaus gave him two thumbs up because the ball was well placed, but it was just a bit over his head. It was that kind of opportunity, that kind of looking for Klaus up top, that it always got close. It was just trending in the right direction, but we could never really finish those opportunities. Couldn't connect that final pass. But Santi, Rasmus Alm. Let's talk about Rasmus Alm for a second, because when the 87th minute came and Nukvi Thorsson and Rasmus Alm came in, we were seeing some pretty consistent substitutes compared to last week. I made note that when Klaus came in for Sam, it was the same minute that Klaus came in for Indy last week. When Ostrak came in for Indiana Vasilev, it was just 6 minutes later than he came in last game. Thor and Alm came in just 1 minute later than Thor and Dürer came in last week. So these seem to be pretty prescribed subs by Carnell, these moments in the games that he's thinking he can use as an opportunity to change things. And this tells me that he tactically, again, liked what he saw in open play and in the majority of the game, that he was able to stick with this plan. He didn't change too much, likely, from what he intended based on these timings and comparing it to last week. But by bringing in Alm and Thor, you have more of an attack focus. And this changed our shape just a little bit, I think, in the sense that you're adding in attackers by taking out Durkin. You're dropping Ostrak a little bit deeper into the midfield along with Edu Leuven, and it gives a little bit more creativity on the ball. But what I liked from Rasmus Alm was that getting behind the lines ability, the ability to just grab the ball when he needed to and keep possession. He was fast. He was tactically sound, and he didn't show any signs of rust. And it was only a short sample size. Granted, he only had 10 minutes or so, just under 10 minutes of actual game time. But what I saw from Alm and Thor had some really, really positive moments. They had some decent chances there as soon as they came in, when Alm recovered the ball on the right and he fed Thor, who was coming in from left to center. Almost a prototypical Thorsson goal scoring opportunity that we saw in preseason. And then again in the 89th minute, where you had Salio trying to cross the ball in. St. Louis continues to pepper with Alm and Thor on the field. 91st minute, Edu Leuven had another really good pass long and high to Rasmus Alm. Rasmus Alm cutting into the middle of the box and nothing again materialized. What did you make of everything that kind of built in? Did you feel like things were, did you feel like it was just a matter of time, or did it really just feel like St. Louis was just throwing the kitchen sink at Austin and things were looking tough to get a goal actually to fall?
Definitely throwing the kitchen sink. There was a shot from the broadcast where every player was past midfield, and you had a lot of guys in the box, and it was just like, okay, it looks like it's going to happen, but maybe City will run out of time. But going back to Rasmus Alm, he looked really good. Yeah, small sample size, but it looks like he's fit and he's back to his playing style. So it was good to see him get him some minutes, and he was part of that final opportunity that led to a goal.
Yeah, the goal from Salio was impressive. And it wasn't just impressive by the goal that Salio scored, but the way that this play kind of built up. I didn't actually give credit on my initial rewatch or my initial watch of this goal to what happened beforehand, but you had Rasmus Alm, we had Klaus start it by keeping the ball in play on a ball that was sent long to him. And then when Klaus was able to head the ball and keep the ball in play on the end line on the right side, Rasmus Alm is the one who went over and recovered it and brought it back and was able to keep the ball into play to feed Tautlin. So another underlapping run that Tautlin was able to make, and Alm found him very well. This is a partnership that I'm going to watch very, very close. Rasmus Alm and Thomas Tautlin on that right side, because when Alm is healthy and fit, he's our best option there on that right wing. If you put him in as a second striker, right mid, Alm needs to be on the field. And this showed a glimpse of what we can see with that, where he kept the ball, he put the ball in the right position for Tautlin. And then Tautlin seemed like he did, if you take Salio's quote after the game, a lot of what he was doing in practice, which is finding Salio on, it wasn't the prettiest cross in the world, but it got exactly where it needed to over that cluster of defense that was in the box. And it did so many times what we've wanted St. Louis to see, which is switching it a little bit, not unlike Austin did with their second goal, where you have a cluster of players in the box jamming things up and you're able to just get the ball over that cluster. And then Salio on the bounce found his shot. And I think it was deflected just slightly by a defender on the inside portion of their leg, but that shot was on target the entire time, crediting Salio for the goal. And Salio post-game said, this comes from a lot of communication between me and Tots during practice. Tots loves these crosses. They're very good crosses. So he always says to me, Salio, always go to the second balls. Always go to the second balls. One ball is going to come to you. So during practice, he played some balls and I wasn't there. So this communication is the relationship between me and him. And then trusting that one ball is going to pop up like it happened in the last minutes. A ball came to me and thank God I could score. I could have a good finish. What'd you make of that?
Yeah, it was a great cross by Tautlin, who again had a great game. And it came up to the last opportunity, but Celio with that clinical finish, it hit one of the defenders. But the fact that he just went for it right away instead of trying to control the ball and maybe finding a better angle, that's great to see, going for those opportunities. And Celio also had a really good game. And so it's good to see those relationships, especially Thomas Tautlin, who is new to the team. Just the way he has adapted to the team so quickly is great to see. And he's going to be great in that position. And that position of right back has a lot of depth with Akil Watts and Jake Narwinski, but for now, that is just Thomas Tautlin, and he's doing great things, and he got his first assist of the year, which is something we haven't seen yet after the three good games he really had at the beginning of the season. But yeah, it's great to see that combination of Tautlin and Celio, and you also mentioned Rasmus Alm when he came in, and Totland and Indiana Vasilev have also looked really good on some of those combinations in previous games. So that's great to see that we have a right back that can go on the attack and get those crosses. So really happy with what I saw from Totland.
Totland can be seen a little bit as the glue that is holding a lot, some of St. Louis City's offense together. I won't say all because there were plenty of opportunities that didn't involve Totland, but the one game that he didn't play this year was Houston away, and that was notable in our inability to create anything offensively. And Thomas Totland, I had said on a post that MLS had, who's the best offseason signing, I said, without a doubt, Thomas Totland should be in that conversation. He's not going to be flashy. He's not going to get the recognition he deserves as a fullback. But what he's doing to facilitate for this St. Louis City offense, it was so consistent when we had our starting 11 versus our myriad of subs that came in. And I credit Thomas Totland so much for that. He's been mentioned throughout this episode in what he was able to do on and off the ball, working off of Indiana Vasilev, working off of Rasmus Alm, Salio. I mean, his ability to connect with all these players is so impressive. And that's why I think that we're only seeing the beginnings of what he has to offer City. And you're right. That right back spot is firmly his. And as we look to wrap up this game, I like a couple quotes from Eddie Leuven and Bradley Carnell that kind of sum this up a little bit, because it is really a tale of two perspectives. Like we started off talking about, is this a good point because we came from behind twice, or is it a bad point because we were clearly the better team throughout? Eddie Leuven says, it's joy and disappointment together because we played a great game. We were by far the better team. I think we had a lot of chances. We concede two easy set piece goals, which disappoints us because that's not who we are. Usually we defend set pieces very well. We always get the first contact. Then we got caught sleeping twice. But the mentality of this team was incredible. And to come out with the result in the end and get 1 point here is still huge for us. So in the end, we should have won that game. But at the end of the day, to take 1 point is great. And then you have Bradley Carnell looking at those, where he says, the two critical moments that we gave away, we have to look at that. It's unfortunate because a performance like this deserves 3 points. And that's ultimately my biggest takeaway, is that this performance deserves 3 points, but you don't always get that in MLS, especially away. There's a stat that I looked up this week that reinforced only 27% of away teams get the win in MLS. It's 10% at least lower than the top leagues in Europe. It's just a difficult league to play away in, but the way that St. Louis was able to play away was a huge positive to take forth from this, knowing what they're going away to next week. And then the fact that it's just the beginning of the season.
Yeah. And yeah, I know it's a little disappointing, but I go back to the fact that we mentioned before, like last year, this would have been a different result. And the fact that the team was resilient, scored twice to even the score, and scoring so late. And Matt, you have to keep me honest, but I think this is this goal is the one goal where City has scored the latest, 97 minutes. I don't recall seeing a goal being scored so late by City. I didn't go back and look at every game last season, yeah. But just from memory, this is the one, right?
Yeah, and it comes on the heels of another late goal that Jose Kojima had. So we're seeing a trend of later and later, and it doesn't do anything for the blood pressure of City fans, but it definitely is consistently showing us that the City team doesn't give up. So Santi, as we get ready to wrap things up, let's hit some players really quickly that we wanted to spotlight, starting with Salio Pompeu, obviously. Player of the game for the City side. Scored his second goal of the season. He's the second City player to score in back-to-back games in MLS play this season after Sam Adeniran. Now has 4 goals, 5 assists over all competitions in his MLS career. He's led the team with 7 progressive carries in this game, which is an impressive stat, given all the way that we talked about how St. Louis was progressing the ball. Bradley Carnell said post-game on Salio, listen, as we started to make a push for the game and we bring on fresh legs, we bring on Tomas Ostrak, we bring on Nukvi Thorsson, Klaus, and as we tried to push the game, you know, Salio poses a 1v1 threat. He can take you down the line. He's got a pretty good left foot for being a right footer, and I think he can tighten the screw down in that department and dominated that left-hand side. And I think Anthony complimented him really well getting in that final third. And yeah, he deserved what he got today. He's been in a good way. You guys have seen it during preseason, and he stepped up to the plate. It was notable that he was the attacker who stayed in the game the entire time. So how much does this say with Bradley Carnell's comments of his 1v1 ability in what Bradley Carnell really thinks Celio can do to change the course of a game, no matter what point it's at?
Yeah, he definitely brings a different dimension with his ability to have success on the 1v1 situations. He was having a duel on that left side with John Gallagher, and towards the end of the game, Celio was being successful on all those situations. As the game wears down and defenders get tired, it's more favorable for Celio to win in those situations. And yeah, just happy for him, because he has been getting his way into the starting lineup and has been able to take advantage of those opportunities. When you get those opportunities to be a starter, if you score and make contributions to the end result, there are chances that you will continue been taken in consideration. And just the fact that he played the 90 minutes, when I saw Klaus was about to come in, the first thing that I thought was like, oh, it's probably Klaus for Celio. But the fact that Celio stayed in the game show how important he is becoming for the team.
Yeah, Celio Pompeu was absolutely one of the biggest runners on the team. And one other player that I think we have to really touch on is going to be Edu Leuven. Edu Leuven, once again, the engine of this offense. He had one goal, obviously, first of the season. Now has 7 goals, 15 assists in his MLS career. He has 1 goal, 5 assists in 3 games against Austin, so consistent in his performance against the Verde. He has scored all 4 PKs taken in his MLS career, so it's fantastic in those high-pressure moments. And he led the team in a lot of key categories that are reminiscent from last week. Shot-creating actions, he had 7 of those, with the next highest being Chris Durkin, Indiana Vasilev with 4. The shot-creating actions, of course, is an action, whether it's a pass, drawing a foul, or ball progression, that leads to a shot, one of those 2 actions before a shot. Touches, Edu Leuven once again led City in touches with 76. The next highest were Anthony Markkanen and Joachim Nielsen with 73. And then Edu Leuven led in key passes with 4. The next highest were Chris Durkin with 2 key passes, those direct passes that lead to a shot or a goal. Edu Leuven putting himself in position again to drive this offense and be the one who puts them in the next opportunity to get a shot off or to create a chance. And this, again, being put in the number 8 position, the box-to-box, the free-flowing midfielder with Chris Durkin being a little more of a pivot and able to do some of the defensive work, you see the partnership work in the chances that they were able to generate. So this is another notch in the belt of the Leuven-Durkin midfield to me.
Yeah, that combination of Leuven-Durkin seems to be working really well and allows Leuven to be that box-to-box, which is what he does best. I know he has mentioned before that he likes playing as a number 6, but when he has that ability to get more freedom and create help with the chance creation is when I think he's at his best. It will be interesting to see what happens when Jabulo Blom is healthy. If Chris Durkin and Blom will be sharing some time, or if maybe it will be Blom and Durkin and maybe Leuven will get more freedom. But for now, Durkin and Leuven are doing a great job. And I go back to the last game where Leuven mentioned that Durkin mentioned that he was going to free him up. And I really like to see Leuven with that more offensive role. And yeah, he still has to improve on some of those touches. And I mentioned it on the set pieces. It hasn't looked as crisp as it was last year, but just give him time and he will be the Edu Leuven he was early last year.
Before we finish up some of these players, one thing Leuven said last week is sticking with me, and I want your opinion on this, because as Leuven progressed in this game, he definitely fell back deeper in the field. Klaus towards the end of the game did fall back a little bit, not quite as deep as I'd say a center defensive mid, but he definitely fell into like a number 10 or a high central mid location underneath Nukby Thorsen. And with Leuven's transition, it reminded me of what he said. We obviously know he has said the quote, he likes to play the six. He feels that's his best or favorite position. But something he said last week to me also was he feels so comfortable with his on-the-ball abilities, with his ability to generate offense, and his offensive tactical abilities. But he keeps mentioning work to do on the defensive side and improving on the defensive side. And so knowing that he said what he said about the number six position and having said that he feels comfortable and confident in his offensive abilities, working on his defensive and continuing to get better there, I wonder if this is a Leuven trying to improve himself holistically in saying that his favorite position is the number six because he doesn't feel as second nature as he does in working on the ball or progressing the ball. And he's more trying to improve himself overall to play that position and just be that two-way player that's so high level, as opposed to this is my favorite position because I'm best at it and being a defensive player is what I do best. Any truth to that, or do you think I'm way off base?
No, I like the way you are approaching that, because he wants to become the best on both sides on the ball, be really good on both sides, and at times he will have to drop back and play as a defensive midfield and be that pivot. So that's good for him to keep improving on that, and as he has said, it's the position he likes the best. But he's really good on the ball too. So just keep working on that defensive capability. And we have seen it with this team. When a player has that versatility and can play multiple roles, that is really good for the team. So the fact that Leuven keeps trying to improve on the defensive end is good for the team too. The only thing for me is just that I always see him as more as that number eight. At times he will need to be used as that pivot depending on the game situation or substitutions and things like that. And we saw it yesterday towards the end with Nugbi Thorisson and Rasmus Alm coming in. But he's getting to that point where he is going to be a more complete player and be able to serve the team on any situation. So I like the way he's thinking there.
Let's hit a few players, rapid fire, some of the ones we want to spotlight before we get out of here. Thomas Totlin, we talked about, for me, notched his first assist, like you said, and his role in this offense we've talked about before. AZ Jackson, had to spotlight him for the number of fouls he drew and getting us in position for the PK. He was all over the field. He swarmed a lot as, what do you call him, a second striker, number 10. He was playing underneath Sam a lot, and he was doing the dirty work, getting the ball where it needed to be. I loved the work AZ Jackson did last night. Joachim Nilsson, in a somewhat different look based on what Austin was doing, he led the team with 7 progressive passes and, like I mentioned, was 2nd in touches with 73, a marked difference from being the lowest outfield toucher last week against New York City, where he touched the ball the fewest times of all the outfield players. I think this spoke to how much Austin was trying to move the ball quickly into the defensive end of St. Louis and what Nilsson was needing to do as that last man back, because Nilsson and Parker both had a lot of touches, a lot of progressive passes. Parker was still playing a little bit of a higher position, so Nilsson was that 1v1 defender back, and he did a lot of work, and he was also able to help move the ball around the field a little bit more as St. Louis was working to progress. Who were some of the players, I think, that you saw some good things out of? Maybe rapid fire, Santi.
Yeah, I think overall, again, a good showing by everybody. We didn't talk a lot about Anthony Markkanen on the left, but as you mentioned, he was one of the leaders on the team in touches, and he worked so well with Celio. So that's a player that also did really well. For me, just Celio and Thomas Totlin, and I like the fact that it's players that maybe you will not expect will be the ones being key players and making a difference. You will expect to mention Klaus, Adeniran, Leuven, but the fact that we're talking about Celio and Thomas Totlin, I think is great overall for the team and for the next few months that are coming. It's a long season, and the fact that it's not like last year, that City won 5 games in a row, but the fact that the team is still undefeated and found ways to score goals late and get the equalizer on a couple of games, because against Real Salt Lake was also a game where the team has scored after the 75th minute. It's good. It's good for the team, and the fact that different players are becoming important for the team and making a difference for the team to get the points. I like that it's spread all over different players. I like that.
There's a question in our live stream chat. Josh Zeller asks, does Salio fill the gap of Gio, or do we still feel it's a necessity to fill at summer, that striker type role? I do still think it's a necessity to get someone else in for depth, but the way the schedule is shaking out for City right now, it's much less of an importance earlier on in the season. So the transfer window for MLS that is open until April, I see less of an urgency to fill that, knowing that we don't have US Open Cup, we don't have Champions Cup matches, we don't have midweek matches until May. And so we're able to flex a little bit of our depth. And you can see that Klaus and Sam can come on for each other. And you can see a few of those attacking options where Thorsen isn't finding many minutes with these other players able to play in front of him. And so that's the extra depth I think we have. Salio has played himself into an everyday role for me. And I think as long as he's healthy and fit, he's going to be that player. So in that regard, maybe, yeah, you can look at him as a replacement of sorts right now, because he's played himself into that position for Nico Gioacchini.
Yeah, and now you have a healthy Rasmus Alm, who's going to start ramping up his minutes. So yeah, I think the team still has a month or two to assess the situation. And if between Celio and Rasmus Alm, even Nubi Torrison, who had a good preseason, maybe is not longer like an urgent need, but yeah, definitely one of those positions where you wanna, if there is a good opportunity, there is a player that you like and that fits the system, and there's an opportunity to bring him during the summer window, I think the team should go for it. But I think for now, there is no need to rush it. Celio and healthy Rasmus Alm will be able to take care of that for now. But just don't rush it. And I'm sure the team, and Diego Gigliani mentioned this at the beginning of the season when they did their beginning of the season press conference. He said, like, don't worry, we're always looking. We have list of players that we're looking at. And I'm sure all of that is happening behind the scenes, and the team will do what they consider best for the team. But I think for now, we're covering that position.
All right, Santi, let's run this thing down and get out of here. Some overall notes on St. Louis is, well, we mentioned earlier for Austin, on their perspective, Austin still has yet to have an offensive player score a goal. Two defenders scored tonight with Hedges and Cascante. St. Louis did a fantastic job limiting their offensive capabilities. And St. Louis has now come from behind twice so far this season to earn a point. They came from behind twice just in this single game, but now two games where we've seen this. The first against RSL with Sam equalizing in the 79th minute, and now Austin Salio finally evening it in the 90-plus third minute of this weekend's game. St. Louis City SC has scored 2 goals in stoppage. This is directly to your point earlier, Santi, in all competitions this season. I mentioned Kojima at the 90-plus 1 against Houston Dynamo, and now Salio with the latest goal that City has seen at the 90-plus 3. City remains unbeaten in the all-time series against Austin, now 2-0-1. And I like to keep track of this because now we're talking about, is Austin a rival based on the on-the-field back and forth that we're having, the highly competitive matchups. And it's always early to talk about that kind of thing unless you have the passionate fan bases back and forth like a geographic rival would give you with Kansas City or Chicago. But I'm happy that this is now part of the conversation. Most importantly for me, the takeaway, St. Louis City SC remains unbeaten in league play this year, moving to 1 win, 2 draws, no losses. And by doing that in 3 MLS matches, St. Louis sits 3rd in the West with 5 points behind Portland and Minnesota, who each have 7. St. Louis remains just 1 of 6 teams undefeated in the Western Conference through 3 weeks of play. And Santi, as we record this right now, there's some afternoon games on Sunday left to play. LA Galaxy being one of those. St. Louis will travel to LA next Saturday to play the Galaxy in Carson, California at Dignity Health Sports Park. The Galaxy play Sunday afternoon after we record this episode against Nashville. We'll update the results on our social media. Maybe I'll add a little plug here for the podcast if anybody tunes in on Monday. Any final words, any parting words, Santi?
No, good overall performance by the team. And thinking of LA Galaxy, and I know we're going to talk about it more on Thursday during the next podcast, but this was a stretch of two games playing away, and the fact that it started with a point will give the team some more freedom to play against Galaxy, who this year is a different team, and it will be a very difficult game. But good start of this a stretch of two games playing away.
Absolutely. Being unbeaten after three is still something to hang your hat on, no matter how it shakes out individually with this game. That's all the time we have. Santi, thanks for joining me so early on a Sunday as we record this for another Flyover Fallout Coffee Talk. If you're listening to us on the podcast, thank you so much for joining us. Be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for all of our Flyover Footy content to come out as we release it. I'm Matt Baker for Santiago Beltran. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back on Thursday night to stream Flyover Footy, and go City.
Vamos City. We'll be right back.